trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
The Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
It's amazing that you took that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Yeah, absolutely,
be true for
because
you.
I can't
think either got to be true or not.
I can't, no.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Andy Cowan, your host for Really Radio Show 60. My God, I've done this 60 times already. For Friday, May 29th, 2015. I'm going to call this the lightning round because all you've got is me. Okay, so why are you here? Well, this is a Really Radio where we dismantle the current events for your edutainment through mostly rational conversations, which you're not going to get tonight, that will make you go, oh, really? And I am your host, Andy Cowan. Rada, from last week, we didn't really have a whole lot of feedback from last week other than, oh my, what the hell happened? I'm not going to go into that this week. We're still working some things out, which is not the reason why that I am doing this solo. So that is mostly technical difficulties and just my desire to run a quick show and get it done. But if you find that I make mistakes this week or any other week, please send me a note at orellyradiopodcast@gmail.com. That's O-R-L-Y, radiopodcast@gmail.com. You can also phone it in, 470-222-6759. That's 6759. All righty, let's see here. What do we have? What has happened over the week? Well, the EPA has proposed to cut the mandate on renewable fuel standards, which I'm not really sure whether or not that's a good idea. Out on Circa, which is, if you do not have the Circa app on your phones, I highly recommend it. Basically what they do is they kind of do what I do, which is cobble things together from multiple articles and digest it down to something smaller for you. They actually get paid to do it. So I'll give them that. Anyway, what they had to say about this, the Environmental Protection Agency has been working on publishing the final 2014 renewable fuel standards. After more than a one-year delay of offering rules for renewable fuels, the EPA proposed cutting their quotas on May 29th. That would be today. The EPA proposed that corn ethanol levels should be set at 13.4 billion gallons this year and 14 billion gallons for 2016. The quota for biodiesel would increase to 1.7 billion gallons this year and 1.8 billion gallons next year. They reiterate the issued to the they reiterated to issue the final standard by November 30th. Now, this is obviously taking them quite a long time to get this going. Why exactly seems to be a little bit, well, it's all political. They've got several different, several different sources that are telling them, that they need to watch out for the industry regulation. Of course, they're under a lot of pressure politically. Let's see. Bob Darblenett, president and CEO of AAA. What is AAA? AAA, the American Petroleum Institute, no. The American Fuel, no. What is AAA? It's not even saying. Oh, it's not AAA, it's AAA. I'm an idiot. There, you don't have to send me that email. I already figured that one out on my own. Anyway, what he said was, quote, "It is not possible to blend the amount of ethanol required by current law, given recent declines in fuel consumption, and it is time for public policy to acknowledge this reality. The EPA should lower ethanol targets immediately as part of the proposed 2014 RFS rule to support consumers and promote alternative fuels." Now, of course, I'm a big alternative fuel fan. I think that we need it. I'm really more in favor of alternative electric vehicles, you know, do more zero emission things because we're already past that carbon tipping point. So we have too many greenhouse gases as it is, and it's not about reducing, it's about now removing, You know, we have to do carbon negative, not carbon less. So I don't know that that's ever going to happen in our current political climate. But hey, you know, dare to dream, dare to dream. Now there. Okay, wait. Unwise and unworkable. Senators Pat Toomey and Dianne Feinstein. So we have a Republican and a Democrat, both introduced a bill in late February to remove the corn ethanol mandate in the RFS because, as they describe it, it's unwise and unworkable. So I'm not in favor of using corn for it. I think that we can do a lot better with it. Corn doesn't seem to be the right fuel of the future, even though that I do have several friends that really love running pure ethanol, E85 in their vehicles to get a little more extra horsepower. Of course, I don't know what that's going to do to their engines, but, you know, that's their problem. All right. In other news, Google unveils Project Soleil, a radar-based wearable to control anything. Get this. Project Soleil is really radar that's small enough to fit into a wearable like a smartwatch. The small radar picks up your movements in real time and uses the movements you make to alter its signal. So imagine that whole scene from Minority Report where he did put on a couple gloves and things like that and some goggles or whatever, and then he's manipulating things on the screen. Now, all of those little movements, even like little finger twitches and things like that, they would possibly be picked up by this Project Soleil. So we're one step closer to actually having real gesture-based interactions. And if it's a fine enough radar, having it on your wrist in one of the Android watches could potentially mean that you could just kind of do twitch interfaces where you're moving your fingers in a certain pattern and you get your phone to do whatever you've programmed it to do. Pretty slick, pretty slick. All right. In weird news, if you happen to know some middle schoolers out there, there is an interesting new thing, though I'm not really sure how new it is. I'm not really up on these things. The Charlie Challenge. According to the Christian Broadcasting Network, of course, they think this is a demonic thing, but what they say is it involves putting two pencils on a piece of paper in the shape of a cross and writing the words yes and no in the boxes outlined by the pencils. The participants then summon what they say is a Mexican demon called Charlie, attempting to ask him questions for guidance for their lives. Of course, they think that it's a demon because that's pretty much what the 700 Club and Pat Robertson and the and his Christian Broadcasting Network do. They think everything seems to be a demonic possession of some type. Who knows? It's plain weird, and it has been. It's been likened to the that whole Bloody Mary thing where you say Bloody Mary three times in a mirror and oh, she appears in the mirror or whatever and tries to kill you. That kind of thing. So there, it has been freaking some kids out because, well, kids kind of like to be freaked out. Some of them don't react too well to it after they have been. So it's going to be one of those things that, if you hear about it, hey, get your kids to talk about it, talk them through it and see what they actually think about it. Could be interesting. I don't think that it's actually demonic possession, by the way. I think we're probably safe from the demons. And with that, I think we're going to hear a word from our sponsor.
Are you annoyed by misinformation spreading like crazy, and you want to stop the flood of nonsense coming from all directions? Go to Wikipedia, as do all those millions out there. Did you know there's an edit button on all Wikipedia articles? Why don't you go and hit that button to start making the world's largest online encyclopedia a more reliable source of information? If you're specifically interested in skeptical topics, come and join us at Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia, an international endeavor to change the world for the better, word by word. There are many ways you can contribute. You just need to start. You speak several languages? All the more reason to join us. We provide training and all the help you need. If you want to make a change, there's a nice community waiting for you out there. contact us at gsowteam@gmail.com. Visit our website, that's gorillaskeptics.com, or check out the Gorilla Skepticism on Wikipedia Facebook page.
All right, and now we are into... the good. And of course, this is good if you happen to be a developer. Very recently, Google had its Google I.O. Developer Conference. That's their Google I.O. 2015. And the folks out at the Next Web did us a favor and compiled all the cool stuff into one document. So I'm going to give a quick read through of that, because this is all the good news that I could really find that is summarily good at this moment. All right, so let's see. In case you noticed, there is a keynote, so we could actually watch that too, but we're not going to do that. All right, Android M. Kicking off the keynote, Google Senior Vice President Sundar Pichai announced that HBO Now is officially on the Play Store, before bringing VP of Engineering Dave Burke out to talk about Android M, which is, of course, the next version of the Android operating system. Now, this is a developer conference. You're not going to see Android M on your phones for a while. All right? Just keep that in mind. Now, if you do happen to have one of the Nexus devices, you're going to get it a lot earlier. But if you have one of those, you already know that by now. All right. The first new feature of Android M is app permissions, simplifying what data users allow apps to access. In this model, apps on Android M will no longer ask for a lengthy permission list upon installation, but instead prompt the user for permission when the app needs to use the feature, i.e. camera or microphone. Oh man, that granularity is going to be so good, because there's so many of those little applications that it'll just randomly use your microphone, or it'll randomly try to access your contacts. And it's like, you know what? No, I don't want you to access the contacts ever. I just want you to do this other thing. Now, mind you, that may break the app. It may really decide that, no, in order to continue, I have to do that. And then, well, your mileage may vary. We'll see how app developers actually integrate that feature in there. Linking. Chrome custom tabs. I believe this is a new add-on, let's see, allows developers to add custom features that overlays on top of apps. For example, the Pinterest app can add custom transition animation to link to the web directly within the app. There's also a new app linking feature that will allow apps to verify links to switch from app to app quickly. So that's definitely going to be a much smoother process if you've tried to go back and forth between multiple tabs and different, browser sessions on your Android phone or tablet. It's kind of a pain. And sometimes on certain devices, those tabs will just close and they'll just go away. So you may just not have enough memory or processor to handle all that. Okay, there's also a new dosing feature, which is designed to help save battery life when the device's motion sensor is stagnant. Now, not all phones have a motion sensor, but they should all at least have the Z-axis, the XYZ gyroscope, which I suppose they would probably use as the motion sensor. Certain phones like the Moto X series, they also have a different built-in motion sensor, which is a little more, a little more robust. So when the device is stagnant, not moving, like just sitting on your table, it is going to use less power. Alarms and notifications will still push to the phone in this state. However, meanwhile, Google said that Google is also going to be unveiling the USB Type-C connector, which is what we're seeing on the latest Chromebook and, the Chromebook Pixel, and also on the MacBook. Those were the first devices to come out with the Android, with the USB Type-C connector, which is, if you have not seen it, you probably ought to go look that up. But it's very similar to the micro USB connectors that you're currently using on your phones, but, it can go in up or down and can also deliver a lot of power, which is very handy. So it's going to be a game changer. It's going to be a game changer. We're going to see it on everything, which is fantastic. All right. And also, Ghoul says apps will now learn your sharing behavior to see who you share content with the most based on which app you're using. I'm not sure what kind of metrics they're going to do, but of course they have become a big data company, so all that's going to go into the cloud somewhere. The Android M developer preview is available today for Nexus 5, 6, and 9, and also the Nexus Player, which is the one that attaches to your TV. Google unveils Android M, HBO Now is headed to the Google Play Store. So for those of you with an HBO subscription, that's going to be fantastic for you. Android Pay. Google says in its keynote that it will expand Android Pay by partnering with mobile providers to pre-install the feature on new devices. Partners include T-Mobile, Verizon, and AT&T to authenticate payments. You can use your fingerprint to verify your identity on phones that have fingerprint sensors. So we're probably going to see much more of that as the newer devices come online. So fingerprint functionality will be built in straight into Android M. It's going to be baked right in. Okay, on to Android Wear. Some new Android Wear updates will include the Always On feature to keep apps on the screen so information is always glanceable in a low-power black and white mode. Users no longer need to tap the screen to wake up the app. This has been a problem with certain things, like if you're in the airport trying to get your boarding pass on your phone, and then your phone goes to sleep or whatever, and then you bring it back up and you want to just see that app again, but it went back to the watch interface. Of course, it's a watch. That's kind of what you'd want to do. But in this functionality, what you absolutely have to have available at your fingertips is right there. So that's going to be a big plus. Also, new wrist gestures, such as flicking up and down to scroll, is added to help in case your hands are full. You can also draw emojis on Android Wear. Not sure why exactly you'd want to do that. I suppose it's gimmicky and great for kids if you're feeling adventurous with your artistic skills. At this time, Google says there are approximately 4,000 apps designed for Android Wear. So that's a lot more than I thought, but I'm not terribly surprised, because it's basically just another level inside apps that you may already use. They may just have an Android Wear function built into them someplace. Oh, Internet of Things. That's their next topic. Google is fully using its Nest acquisition. If you're not familiar with Nest, they're the makers of the smart thermostat and also the smart smoke detectors. They did have a bit of a kerfuffle when their smoke detectors would automatically silence themselves detecting erroneous motion, because you're supposed to be able to, like, imagine you're in your kitchen and you're cooking. You have not actually set anything on fire, but you have managed to trigger your smoke alarm. And instead of trying to get up on a ladder or something and press the little button to make it shut up, it had a feature where you could just wave at it. It's like, no, 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 stop, go away. That broke. That was apparently a bad thing and would silence itself too soon. So it was a possibility that it would not actually fire off in a real emergency, which is a problem. But that feature was removed, and things are progressing nicely. After that, Google bought the whole company, so they have smart learning thermostats and those smoke detectors, as I was saying. Those also integrate with things like the Smart Things Hub for home automation. So it's using the Nest acquisition to step into the Internet of Things market by announcing Project Brillo, its own operating system for IoT devices, Internet of Things. Brillo is derived from Android to provide low-power wireless solutions that can easily be scalable to all types of Android devices. I wonder what that's going to be. I'm going to have to look into that, because I'm getting into this home automation thing. It's also using its own language named Weave to communicate between the Brillo OS, a device, and the cloud. Weave is available across platforms. Brillo will launch in developer preview in quarter three. Weave will come out in Q4. I'm not sure what I think about that. It should be very interesting. I know that the Smart Things Hub, which if you're out there and following some of the stuff that I do, you'll see that I've had a couple posts in the Topic Tuesday variety of Internet of Things, you know, the smart home features. And I've got the Smart Things Hub, which runs both Z-Wave and Zigbee protocols. Of course, this may be, you know, not something you're very interested in which case, fast forward. Basically, there are two protocols. Zigbee has been around longer. Z-Wave has been around not as much, but it's had a very rapid adoption. I believe both protocols allow for a mesh networking, so one can basically repeat the signal to a further off device, and they can do all sorts of things. I've got thermostats, smoke detectors, I have a smart lock, bulbs. You name it, you can probably automate it through the system. It's kind of clunky. I'm not terribly pleased with the interface, but it does allow me to do a lot of things, and it has integration with another wonderful program website, If This Then That, IFTTT. And that allows me to do a lot of automated things, like every time my lock is locked or unlocked, it actually sends a notification to a Google spreadsheet. So I can then look back and say, oh, good, somebody is home, or, oh, why did my door open? Things like that. All right, so I will be definitely taking a look at Brillo and seeing where that goes. Okay, Google Now's now on tap. What does that mean? Make your smartphone more smart. Google says it's working to make Google Now even more contextual by learning your behaviors, habits, and lifestyles. I thought it was already doing that. Anyway, to assist you in your daily life, Google Now wants to provide proactive answers, such as estimating how long ride lines are when you arrive to Disneyland or where you parked your car. To do so, Google Now teased a Now on Tap feature that will gain context based on what you're looking at on your screen. For example, if Google Now knows you are traveling to San Francisco, it can provide your boarding pass upon your arrival to the airport, give you an option to order an Uber when you've landed, or give you an option to order groceries when you're en route. Well, that's kind of handy. In other examples, you can listen to Skrillex on Google Music and pause to ask Google, what is his real name? And it will know you mean to ask about the artist you're currently listening to. That could be interesting. The final demo includes a text on Viber that mentions dinner at a restaurant. Oh, so it's integrated with Viber. That's interesting. Viber is another one of those, it's a chat client that is very popular globally. It also allows free, mobile-to-mobile calling or app-to-app calling. So you can do, I think you can do video as well as voice. But it's all free, and it has a big following. So it's kind of takes the place of like Yahoo Messenger or AIM or even Google Messenger at this point, which is now Hangouts, of course. So I know they've been integrating an awful lot of apps. That surprised me. I didn't know that. Okay, so if a message from Viber or wherever else comes in mentioning dinner at a restaurant and Google Now opening OpenTable with the page of said restaurant open and ready for reservation. So basically it's trying to really do predictive behavior with context based on your actual life at the time, which is very nice. Though a lot of people are going to think this is invasive, it's not. These are all signals that you're giving to the phone. You know, if you're email came in through Gmail. Yes, they are scraping that for contextual information so that they can provide things like this. But it's all algorithm based. So don't worry about somebody actually looking at it. Nobody's looking at it. They're just trying to provide you with the best service so that you continue to use the products and continue to see their advertisements and things like that so that they can continue. It's a good business model. And if you don't agree with me, please email me. ohreallyradiopodcast@gmail.com or give me a call 470-222-OREALLY, O-R-L-Y. All right, Google Photos. I did notice that this just came down as an available option on my phone. Okay, we all take way too many photos, says Google. So its solution is Google Photos. The app will help you back up your photos unlimited and free. Unlimited and free. And allow you to browse photos across a timeline. Additionally, you can also sort your photos based on people and places without needing the user to add tags. So basically, it's using the metadata from your camera and your GPS location to figure out where those were. It may also be scraping the image, like if it sees the Eiffel Tower, it's going to know it's the Eiffel Tower. It's getting smart enough to do that. They've had great facial recognition for a long time, but it creeped everybody out, so they kind of backed off a little bit. But they've got it. All they have to do is turn it on. Finally, you can use Google Photos to make videos and collages based on suggestions the app gives according to location and date. You can also auto-create a movie based on recent content as well. Of course, you can edit the content before you share. I've seen some of this before. They've been rolling this out slowly. This is definitely an iterative product. They've been doing that a lot with Google Hangouts and Google Plus. So this is kind of being the photos features that were in Google Plus that are being broken out into a separate app, which is great. Now, the thing about the unlimited and free, it is not unlimited at full resolution. So if you're concerned about the highest resolution available, you're still going to need to use something else. I would recommend probably, let's see, that one that Yahoo bought, Flickr. Yeah, Flickr gives you a free terabyte, which is an awful lot of space. And they allow you to upload the full image, and then it automatically scales them down to different resolutions, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a while since I've really dug into the program. But basically what they do is Google has had an auto-enhance feature for uploads of its of photos for quite some time. And they do a pretty good job. Every now and then you'd see things like, if it was around Christmas time, you'd see like a little snow globe kind of effect, a little snow coming down in the background of the picture. Really neat algorithmic stuff that they were doing. But basically, it's not going to be at full resolution. It's going to be at a very high resolution, but it's going to basically turn what was a high res image into something that is a smaller, more compressed JPEG for use on their service. But as long as you enable that, there's no limit. And that is that's not bad. That's not bad at all. I still recommend that you upload to more than one service just because, who knows, maybe Google will go away one day. I doubt it, but maybe they will. So, or maybe they'll change their terms of service. So you're going to want it in more than one place. And there's a lot of programs that allow you to store them in more than one place. OneDrive, Dropbox, Box, Flickr. All of them will allow image upload automatically as soon as you have the app on there. Just enable it. Okay, so that's available today, so you could find that in the Google Play Store. Offline connectivity. Ooh, this is a good one. Because Android is available in so many parts of the world, Google talked about its efforts to make its app available in countries where internet is limited. For example, it launched YouTube offline in developing countries in the past few months, as well as offline support for Chrome. Today, Google has introduced offline maps, allowing you to access Google Maps location, search, and directions without requiring an internet connection. It can also aggregate reviews, so you can access this information entirely offline. Offline maps will be available later this year. That'll be nice. That'll be really nice. Okay, developer tools. Let's see. This isn't going to be nearly as interesting for everyone, especially since it was a developer conference, but let's see. Google quickly moved back to talking about developer stuff, including Android Studio 1.3 Preview and Polymer 1.0. Android Studio offers full editing and debugging support for C++, and developers can access various SDK or software developer kits via the CocoaPods. That's interesting. That's apparently that's a website. I'm not sure exactly what you'd have to do. Okay. But I'm also not a developer, so take this with a grain of salt and feel free and correct me. Send me an email. Additionally, Google will launch Cloud Test Lab to help automate app testing across 20 devices to provide crash reports. Oh, that's handy. Google also launched cloud messaging to iOS, allowing users to subscribe to topics so they will receive only updates that are relevant to them. There are also a ton of new mobile ad tools. So, yeah, it's all about advertising. And then you can also test out your Play Store listing to see which graphics or copies work best for you. Speaking of the Play Store, Google is reorganizing the way it displays search results. For example, searching for shopping no longer brings up the most popular shopping apps, but relevant sections from such as coupons and fashion. Well, that's nice. For parents, they can look for a Family Star badge to find content that's kid-friendly. They can even look for popular children entertainment characters and search for related content. That's great. That's good. Given that I'm a dad, it's a thing. Android Nano Degree. Google announced a partnership with Udacity? U-D-A-C-I-T-Y? Udacity? To offer a 6-month course that teaches them all things Android. The course costs $200 per semester to obtain what's called an Android Nano Degree. Well, that's interesting. I guess that would be very handy for budding developers that want to get into the biz. And if you do, hey, how about you build an app for me? I'd love it. Actually, I do have several ideas for apps that I would really love, but that's another show. All right, and virtual reality. Oh, okay. Android, no. Announced during last year's conference, Google announced that the Google Cardboard SDK, software development kit, for Unity, one of the platforms, will now support iOS. It's got an improved viewer as well, and is overall easier to assemble. Now, Google Cardboard, for those of you that were not aware of what they were doing, quite literally, there's that word literally, so if you're doing the drinking home at home, take a shot. Basically they have a box, you know, a little cardboard sheet that has patterns. You fold it together and Velcros and has little magnets in it. And once it's together, you then slap your phone inside and it is a VR headset. So you're looking directly at your phone screen in a more immersive environment. It does have a cutout for your camera, so it allows for a augmented reality as well if you're using the camera features. So it's expanding on that. It was really a joke, at least kind of a joke. Everyone thought it was a joke last year at I/O, but now it has continued to develop, and it is a cheap way to get into it. There were many different rigs, the Oculus Rift, and that's the only one that I can name right now, but there are others out there that were trying to get into this, and they had a different view, and they weren't using a phone to do it. They had their own proprietary stuff. But this allowed you to use your own stuff, and it was a very novel approach. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And it looks like they're continuing it. There's a new Expeditions VR program that lets teachers control virtual field trip destinations from a tablet and allows students to explore new places from a Google Cardboard VR system. Finally, Google announced Jump, a camera rig system that will allow anyone to record VR video. Essentially, it puts a camera, any camera you'd like, in a ring to record in 360 degrees. Google also partnered with GoPro to sell a jump-ready camera rig this year. YouTube will support jump videos, with non-stereoscopic videos available to try this summer. That's going to be pretty neat. So you're actually going to have VR content on YouTube. That's pretty slick. And that's all that we had to discuss there. Whew, that was a mouthful. That was a lot. So with that, let's hear about our fallacy of the week.
Hi, I'm Christina with this week's O'Reilly Radio Logical Fallacy. Slippery slope. You said that if we allow A to happen, then Z will eventually happen too. Therefore, A should not happen. The problem with this reasoning is that it avoids engaging with the issue at hand and instead shifts attention to extreme hypotheticals. because no proof is presented to show such extreme hypotheticals will in fact occur. This fallacy has the form of an appeal to emotion fallacy by leveraging fear. In effect, the argument at hand is unfairly tainted by unsubstantiated conjecture. An example, John Joe asserts that if we allow same-sex couples to marry, then the next thing we know, we'll be allowing people to marry their parents, their cars, and even monkeys.
Thank you, Christina. And now we are into the bad. Now, something that that came across my feed was a rather unexpected thing. I hadn't really thought about it, and I wanted to at least bring it to my listeners' attention. The food manufacturing and processing business is dangerous. And in 2012, Bumblebee Tuna and they have to cook the fish itself. So the tuna that is actually in the cans is not completely raw. Okay. So they have very large ovens, like in this particular, case, it was a 35-foot oven. And Jose Molina, who is a 62-year-old repairman, was working in the oven fixing something. Not sure exactly what was wrong. Cause unfortunately it was, that or he had just fixed it, as two other employees did not realize that he was inside the oven and had put 12,000 pounds of tuna in the oven and then closed the door with him inside. As the oven reached a rather low, but still deadly 270 degrees, well, he expired. So, his body was found later, by another plant employee. It's very sad, of course. There was an investigation filed, and it basically, they have been, it's not murder. You know, it's, it would kind of be like a manslaughter thing. But it's former safety manager Saul Flores and the director of plant operations Angel Rodriguez, who still work at the plant, were each charged on April 27th with three felony counts of committing an occupational safety and health violation that caused death, and Bumblebee Foods was also charged with the same counts. So District Attorney Jackie Lacey said, although the Bumblebee investigation began in 2012, this case represents our commitment to protecting workers from illegal and potentially deadly on-job practices. If convicted, Bumblebee Foods could face a fine of up to $1.5 million. Conviction for Rodriguez and Flores could mean a prison term of up to 3 years or up to $250,000 in fines each. All three are scheduled to be arraigned May 27th. So that was just a couple days ago, but I have not seen what the, oh wait, hang on. There may be a follow-up. No follow-up there. It's dangerous out there. Make sure to follow all your safety procedures. Make sure to look around you. Make sure to get people out of harm's way. Be safe out there. You do not exist in a vacuum. There are other people around you, and just be safe. That's all I can really tell you. I hate to see things like this happen. When I was working for, a company building Jurassic Park for Islands of Adventures, here in Orlando, during that summer that we were building, there were several deaths of heat exhaustion. And we were all very aware of how deadly that situation was. And of course, every death and every injury was one of those real learning moments. And you do take that home with you. You know, you realize. But it's hard when you're in the moment. So just always try to be aware of your surroundings. It is hard, especially in the case where you're working in construction. There's a lot of things that can affect you, especially in my case, it was heat exhaustion. There were so many people out there and it was 110 degrees. There was no shade. We took down all the trees to make everything happen. There was not enough water. No one could get the right stuff that they needed unless they brought it in with them. And if you're just a little bit careless, you know, you forgot to bring your banana so you could have enough potassium to keep your brain working right, you may forget to go do something and heat stroke very shortly thereafter. Or you might start to get woozy and pass out and fall off a rig. And yes, there are safety lines and things like that. But something I found interesting, I was in an arrestor vest, which it's a five-port harness, and it has a strap on the back, and that strap you would then attach to a safety line. And that safety line was about 6 feet, and then at 6 feet, it then had an arrestor, a descent line, basically. It would come out more slowly to slow your descent slightly of another 4 feet. Here's the fun part. You had to wear this at any time you were over 6 feet high. It's not going to do anything. You're going to bounce. So not all the rules make the best sense, but you have to use your own common sense, and you have to then also take care of other people. You know, if somebody's having a hard time, you know, they're overloaded, they're trying to do too much, help them out. You know, take smaller trips, you know, work smarter, not harder, because I know that we all tried to do more and, you know, trying to be a good employee. And of course the machismo out there on a construction site, for instance, is palpable. It's a big force, and everyone's trying to outdo the other one, and it's stupid. It's absolutely ludicrous, and it hurts people, and it causes real distress and sometimes death. So take that as you will. And enough of that. Now, on to something a little funnier, but funny in the, no, really, you're kidding, right? Volvo self-parking car hits people because the owner didn't pay for an extra feature. Yeah, kind of funny. Last week, a gossip blog based in the Dominican Republic called Remochla published a disturbing video of what it said was a self-parking car accident. A group of people stand in a garage watching and filming a gray Volvo XC60 that backs up, stops, and then accelerates towards the group. It smashes into two people and causes the person filming the video with his phone to drop it and run. It is terrifying, according to this particular blog. We reached out to Volvo for answers about what went wrong here, and the company's response was also a bit disturbing. Volvo spokesperson Johan Larsson explained that the video is mislabeled. He said the car is not attempting to self-park. It seems they are trying to demonstrate pedestrian detection and auto braking, said Larsson by email. Unfortunately, there were some issues in the way the test was conducted. The main issue, said Larsson, is that it appears that the people who bought this Volvo did not pay for the, quote, pedestrian detection functionality, which is a feature that costs more money. Quote, the Volvo XC60 comes with city safety as a standard feature. However, this does not include the pedestrian detection functionality, said Larsson. The city safety system kicks in when someone is in stop-and-go traffic, helping the driver avoid rear-ending another car while driving slowly or under 30 miles per hour. You know, I would think that a little software feature like that, you've got it. Why are you going to pay extra money for it? Why would they even go so far as to not put that in and now get this negative publicity? That doesn't make any sense to me. The pedestrian detection feature, which works using radar in the car's grille and a camera located behind the windshield, has been around since the mid-2000s. I did not know that. And even started detecting cyclists in 2011, but it costs approximately $3,000, according to IEEE, which is the International Engineering, Electrical Engineering. What is that? I will tell you now. I will try to tell you now. Advanced technology. Oh, about. Stands for Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers. I knew it was something kind of simple like that. Okay. Sorry. All right. But even if it did have the feature, Larson says the driver would have interfered with it by the way they were driving and accelerating heavily towards the people in the video. The pedestrian detection would likely have been inactivated due to the driver inactivating it by intentionally and actively accelerating, said Larson. Hence, the auto braking function is overrided by the driver and deactivated. Huh. Well, that's interesting. Apparently, no one was actually seriously injured by the car striking them, since they were right in the way and all that. But, again, this seems like something that if you've got these safety features and it's just a software component, put it in the system. Don't even put yourself up for this kind of negative publicity. I mean, certainly I didn't know about this and now I do, but is this the way I should have found out? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. If you think so, please give me an email. OReillyRadioPodcast@gmail.com. And let's see. Oh, yes. This is for my very good friend Z. A recently discovered wasp species named for a Harry Potter creature. It is known as the Dementor wasp. If you have not seen the Harry Potter series, or read the books, then you aren't going to know what we're talking about. But the Dementors are ghost-like creatures that basically suck positive feelings away from you, leaving you nothing but an empty shell, a soulless being or something. So according to this article on IFL Science, you know what that means, these awful creatures have now made the transition from fantasy to scientific literature, and they are now the namesakes of a newly discovered species of cockroach wasp. Oh, God, it just gets worse. The name Ampulex Dementor was chosen through public voting and has been described by Stephanie Kraus and her team on the Natural History Museum in Berlin. The paper has been published in PLOS ONE. The wasp, native to Thailand, has bright red and black coloring. It is one of over 200 species of wasp, which reproduces by way of, get this, a host incubator. And this species chooses cockroaches. The female lands on top of a cockroach and, using its stinger to inject neurotoxins directly into the roach's head, the cockroach immediately takes on a zombie-like obedient state, following the wasp back to her burrow, where she lays her eggs inside the cockroach. The roach incubates the eggs for a few days until it hatches. The larva then feed on the roach until it is old enough to go off on its own. With the reproduction strategy like that, it's no wonder that a Dementor was chosen by museum visitors. There are some various options, but yeah, wow. So it is creatures like this, actually, that were highlighted in Darwin's On an Origin of Species Evolution by Series of Natural Selection, where he found that, you know, that was the life cycle of certain insects, you know, and it affected him. Let's look at it that way. It affected him greatly and caused him to truly, debate the nature of his own faith as he was about to go into the clergy when he was, given the opportunity to sail on the Beagle. Okay. And that's enough of that. And let's see. Oh, yes. Well, I guess we have another break. Here we go.
Hi, O'Reilly Radio listeners. This is your host, Andy Cowan, calling my voicemail to make sure that it still works. Please consider calling us, 470-222-6759. Bye.
Okay, on to the ugly. I'm not going to spend too much time on it because, really, I think most of us have already kind of lived it. But it's the Patriot Act. Yay! No, boo, 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 boo. Okay. It is coming up to where the Patriot Act has to be, it either has to expire or has to be voted in to continue. And there's a certain subsection of the Patriot Act. I believe it's section 215. Let me see if I can find that, just so that I can speak intelligently on it. And I'm not finding it there anyway. So, anywho, the Congress has to deal with it, and in order to raise awareness, the Fight for the Future Foundation has created a little campaign with a hashtag, I feel naked. And this stems from several reports of the NSA spreading around nude pictures that it was able to acquire through unencrypted emails and things like that as it was sucking them all in for spying on citizens, basically. So we are vulnerable. For instance, right now, I'm on webcam. It's very possible that all of this is all being sucked into a giant data center somewhere where the water is inexpensive and the power is cheap. But there are pictures of scantily clad, men, women, and, the occasional puppy dog I see in here, with the hashtag I feel naked. And this is to kind of shame Congress and the NSA of the mass spying. To quote the website, it's like a strip search online. We should never, ever have to worry that the government is watching our private moments. Congress should be ashamed that they want to see our naked photos, so we're putting up plenty of them to make sure they are. Join the protest with your photos with the hashtag IFeelNaked.org. Actually, there's a website, ifeelnaked.org, and then add your photo, and, oh, can't add a photo? Contact Congress instead. And there's a handy little website. Oh, and I have stumbled into it. Okay. The email body that they'll have here for Fight for the Future is, please overturn Section 215 of the Patriot Act and Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. These legal rules have been twisted by government agencies to allow mass spying of U.S. citizens without a warrant or any suspicion of wrongdoing. The so-called USA Freedom Act would only make matters worse by creating new legal loopholes for the NSA and law enforcement agencies to collect even more data on millions of Americans. I'm calling on you to oppose the USA Freedom Act and to let the Patriot Act expire and end mass surveillance by the U.S. government. I think that's a great idea. And, you know, while I'm here, putting my name in the hat right now, because the Patriot Act is renewing as soon as tomorrow. Most likely, they're going to go through and do much of this over the weekend, but who knows what they can actually do these days, since they've been purposely putting themselves in massive gridlock for the last 7 years. And email Congress. Oh, and of course, there's also a call Congress, but I'm going to skip that step because we don't need to do that right now. Though maybe I should. Nope, too late. I already clicked away. Okay. So I highly recommend go ahead and follow the links in the show notes, which are available at O'ReillyRadio.com under show 60, under the ugly section, where the Patriot Act is coming And with that reminder, that'll take you out to the Daily Dot. But you could also do ifeelnaked.org. In fact, I'm going to put that link in there right now. So that way you can go out there and you can be a part of this little movement and make your opinion known. There we go. Okay. Now, we're moving over to Texas now, because Texas is a funny place. Now, as you're probably aware, Texas has been undergoing a huge amount of flooding, and it's tragic. It's tragic that it's harming people. The land needs it, and certainly our aquifers need to be refilled. So it's good and it's bad. It's bad the way it's happening, but the land needs the water, so it's hard. Of course, also when it's uncontrolled like this, who knows what ends up in the aquifer? Hopefully the land is able to filter it out by the time it actually makes it to the underground reservoirs. But, well, here's the title. This is out on Politicus USA. Right-wingers claim Texas flooding caused not by climate change, but witchcraft and sodomy. Witchcraft and sodomy. Well, let's see. Who in Texas could possibly be... Oh, that's it. That's who it is. It's Brian Fisher, ladies and gentlemen. Brian Fisher. Let's see what he says with this video clip.
What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to make some comments on the Texas flooding. The places that are underwater, Austin, Wimberley, San Marcos, Bastrop, and the Hill Country,
yeah,
they're overrun with witchcraft and sodomy. If you go into those areas, you can just see it. And also Houston, they have a whole area that's like a Sodom and Gomorrah. It's Montrose Street. And then, they have a sodomite mayor. So if anybody says that Texas is being judged for its conservative values or being judged and can even connect conservative values with it, that's very far-fetched, because here in the Brazos Valley, we're like between Austin and Houston, and we've had a lot of flooding too, but we're not underwater, even though we're in a valley. You know what's different about the Brazos Valley is that we kicked out abortion. We don't have an abortion clinic, and the views here are pretty conservative. So I just find that very interesting. I believe if God's judging Texas, it's because of the witchcraft, craft and sodomy that we've allowed to run rampant.
Okay, Rebecca. Well, listen, I appreciate the call. You know, and Rebecca's point is, look, if you're going to attribute what's happened, the flooding in Texas, to some kind of supernatural cause, says you can make a geographical connection between the flooding and the practice of the occult and witchcraft and the embrace of homosexuality. That's where the disaster is being felt the worst. So that's an interesting thing. And of course, I'm not saying this is what's happening in Texas, but you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, that was a natural disaster, and it was very localized. I mean, it's probably volcanic activity, but it wiped out those two towns. It didn't wipe out the entire region. It just wiped out those two cities where homosexuality had been embraced. So that is Rebecca's point, that if you're going to make a case that there's some kind of supernatural origin to this natural disaster, that probably be the place to look.
So, Brian Fisher and his show are a never ending source of fascinating things. Though he did actually sound slightly reasonable there, by insinuating that Sodom and Gomorrah was, more like a volcanic, incident as opposed to, a specific deity's wrath in particular, though he's still proclaiming that that deity caused the volcanoes to erupt. So apparently, in his opinion, volcanoes are also caused by, what was that, sodomite mayors and rampant homosexuality. Really? Oh, really? I don't think so. The article here also likes to point out that, well, there's this little issue that in Genesis 9:11, God said, "I establish my covenant with you that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of a flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. Well, at least the earth is safe, but he didn't say anything about Texas. So, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I really have very little else to say about what's going on there. It's really kind of funny, but hopefully all the people of Texas are getting the as best treatment and recovery operations are underway. And our thoughts are with them. And with that, I believe we are done. Yes. Yes, we are. There we go. Oh, and Irk. I forgot. When I'm doing things myself, I tend to forget things. I had a pick. Can't leave you without something that I actually like. And I had to replace my headset, just recently. And I like to listen to podcasts. I know, big shocker, right? As I'm a podcaster. Of course, I also listen to audiobooks, tons and tons of audiobooks and podcasts, and even occasionally some music. So I have with me here, hopefully you can see this well, this is the Plantronics M70 Bluetooth headset. It uses Bluetooth 3.0, which is a pretty decent standard. It does have a on-off switch, dedicated on-off switch. It also uses the micro USB, the same power supply that pretty much all of my devices use these days. And it will pair with more than one phone, only up to two, or at least two devices. So you could use it for your computer or something if you needed to do like video conferencing or anything like that. Like I could even be doing this show over the Bluetooth headset, though I imagine the audio quality would not be as nice as it is right now. It does offer, get this, 11 hours of talk time in this itty-bitty little 5-gram package. It's pretty awesome. And it does have some advanced features. It actually talks to me a little bit. When I turn it on, it will say how much talk time it has, which is great. If you're not using it, it'll go into a deep sleep mode, like if it's not attached to a device, and then it will last a very long time. It will put itself into a deep sleep mode. And by long time, I mean like 100 days or even longer. You can find this out on Amazon for a paltry sum of only $30. It's not as comfortable as the previous one. I had a M50. Also from Plantronics, did much of the same, a little less talk time, a little less listening time in that regard. But this one works just fine, and it gives me that extra talk time. I found it had a weird gel piece on the ear, and I found that was pinching my ear a little bit, and that made it uncomfortable. So I've taken that off, so I just kind of loosely wear it on my ear. But it is sufficient. For everything I need, and once it's like that, it just hangs on my ear, and it's so light, I don't even notice it, really. In fact, I did find myself actually looking for it once upon a time just today. So it's pretty good. Also, I've taken to just plugging my phone in and wandering about the house with it, and it gets an awful lot farther than other Bluetooth headsets I've had. So it's just a great performer all around. You could do a lot worse. A lot worse. So, good stuff all around there. And now, there we go. Okay. All right, that's it for us tonight. We'll be back next Friday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. In the meantime, the conversation should continue on the web. Head over to orellyradio.com. That's O-R-L-Y radio.com for all the links right at the top of the page. And, hey, do watch us live if you can, and go ahead and chat in the IRC. We didn't have any visitors today, but that's okay. If you've liked what we've done here, what I've done here today, you can help keep my lights on by going over and following the Help Us link on the webpage. And that will take you over to patreon.com/Cowen, C-O-W-E-N. That would be me. And that's patreon.com/Cowen. If that's too rich for you, I know that sometimes money is tight for all of us. You can contribute to the show with other ideas. We need corrections. Advertising offers are always nice. Unclaimed lottery tickets, hate mail, unsolicited advice, you know, whatever you happen to have. Go ahead and email those to us at oreallyradiopodcast@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 470-222-OREALLY. That's 6759. Also, hey, we've got a subreddit. You can post stories there. Upvote them, downvote them, whatever you like. And, hey, wherever you found us, go back there and leave us a review. Hopefully a positive review, and because that really raises us in the rankings and grows our audience, which is always fantastic. And of course, hey, we've got the social media thing down here. Go ahead and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Google Plus, and subscribe to the YouTube channel where you're going to find all of the stuff archived right there. Can't thank you enough for spending some time with me this evening. This has been O'Reilly Radio, part of the Cowan Services Network. The music was created by Kevin McLeod of Incomptech.com. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.